glitter everywhere. She told me. Yeah, yes. Welcome back, everybody. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in for Earl. Hope you're having a good day so far. Thank you for tuning in to your local civic media radio station. We've got 6 minutes after 10 o'clock on this Thursday morning. It's the 18th of May, and we've been discussing a number of topics today. If you would like to share your opinion on anything we've discussed so far, feel free to call in. The phone number is 844-967-2789. And if you'd like to send me an email message, you can do so. My email address is stumanradio@gmail.com. And Stu is spelled S-T-U. And, you know, one of the biggest topics of conversation right now is the debt ceiling. You know, we got to pay the bills that we've rung up. And seems like Republicans are putting up a fight. They are stomping their feet and they're asking for a whole bunch of things before they agree to pay for the things that we've already spent money on, or that these are debts that have already accumulated. This is not new stuff. So what's going on with the debt ceiling, and why do we even have a debt ceiling? Why can't Congress just pay the bills and keep moving forward? Well, there's a story in the Business Insider today. The headline, it says, Senate Democrats are asking Joe Biden to stop negotiating with Republicans on a debt ceiling solution and take a route that would get rid of the problem forever. How does that sound to you? There's a couple of bullet points here. First one says, Senate Democrats are asking Biden to prepare to use the 14th Amendment to solve the debt ceiling crisis. The 14th Amendment would allow Biden to bypass Congress and declare the debt ceiling unconstitutional. Biden has expressed hesitancy taking that route due to potential litigation. And the story from the Business Insider starts this way. It says, pressure is building on President Joe Biden to bypass Congress and solve the debt ceiling crisis on his own using the Constitution. On Wednesday, yesterday, the Washington Post first reported that five Democratic senators have spearheaded an effort to urge Biden to invoke a clause in the 14th Amendment to address the debt ceiling. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy on Monday that the U.S. could default as soon as early June if Congress does not raise the debt ceiling by then. But lawmakers have still yet to come to an agreement on staving off a financially devastating and unprecedented default. That's why Senators Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Tina Smith, Ed Markey, and Jeff Merkley are circulating a letter shared with Insider to Biden, urging him to invoke a clause in the 14th Amendment that would declare the debt ceiling unconstitutional, getting rid of the debate forever, and the congressional drama that comes with it. Quote, it is unfortunate that Republicans in the House of Representatives and Senate are not acting in good faith. Instead, Republicans have made it clear that they are prepared to hold our entire economy hostage unless you accede to their demands to reduce the deficit on the backs of working families. The lawmakers wrote, that is simply unacceptable. Section 4 of the 14th Amendment states that, quote, the validity of the public debt of the United States, authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services in suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned, end quote. And as the U.S. inches closer and closer to a default, it's a route a growing number of Democrats appear to be on board with. Quote, the choice we face is clear. We cannot reach a budget agreement that increases the suffering of millions of Americans who are already living in desperation, the lawmakers wrote, adding that using this authority would allow the United States to continue to pay its bills on time without delay, preventing a global economic catastrophe, end quote. Many legal experts have argued that language indicates that a default would be unconstitutional, meaning the president would be required to ignore the debt ceiling and continue borrowing as normal to pay for the nation's financial obligations. That would ensure Congress would never have to squabble over the issue again. Representative Jamie Raskin, for example, told Insider in a Wednesday interview that the 14th Amendment, quote, provides the whole structure for resolving the conflict. The Constitution clearly disfavors an economic default and the resulting collapse in the full faith and credit of the United States, he said. And Senator Sheldon Whitehouse wrote on Twitter on Wednesday that, quote, disabling the hand grenade McCarthy is wielding would relieve markets forever, that this dangerous brinksmanship will never happen again, end quote, voicing support for the 14th Amendment. Still, some Republican lawmakers, White House officials, and even Biden himself have expressed concerns with that route. McCarthy said earlier this month that he opposes using the 14th Amendment to address the debt ceiling, and Biden told reporters last week that even though he had been considering invoking that clause, the problem is it would have to be litigated. He said that he doesn't think the 14th Amendment solves our problems now. I think that only solves your problems once the court has ruled that it does apply for future endeavors. Not all Democrats are on board either. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy told NBC News that when it comes to using the 14th Amendment, quote, I don't want to give Joe Biden advice, but I think we should do our job. I think that's a precedent to just absolve Congress from being adults, end quote. Following a meeting Biden hosted with top lawmakers on Tuesday to discuss the debt ceiling, in which little progress was made, the administration plans to continue talks this week to reach a deal as soon as possible. But with neither side refusing to compromise at this point, the 14th Amendment might be a key way to prevent a default in a matter of weeks. What do you think? You have an opinion on that? Feel free to share your opinion with us. The phone number here is 844-967-2789. Should Biden use the 14th Amendment? Should we just say it's time to end that whole debt ceiling nonsense? Why does Congress have to approve paying for bills that we've already racked up? That is the question. And I'd be interested to hear what you have to say on that. And I've got some more information here about these new polls showing that the current president is quite a few points ahead of the previous president. This is from The Independent. The headline says, more Trump indictments would give Biden and Democrats huge 2024 boost, a poll finds. The poll shows Democrats becoming more energized if Mr. Trump faces more criminal charges. President Joe Biden would be vaulted to a massive lead over Donald Trump if the former president faces further criminal charges from the federal and state criminal investigations into his conduct, according to a new poll obtained by The Independent. The poll of 1,571 registered voters was conducted by WPA Research, a Republican polling firm. Okay, this is a Republican polling firm, and I believe that they're going to tell us that Biden is ahead in this poll by 7 percentage points. The CEO of WPA is an advisor to Never Back Down, the super PAC supporting Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, but the survey was conducted independently without his input and was not sponsored by the super PAC. It found that voters currently prefer Mr. Biden over Mr. Trump by a margin of 47% to 40%, including a 14-point lead for the sitting president among registered independents. That's 5 points worse than the 9-point deficit among independents that led to Mr. Trump losing to Biden in 2020. The twice impeached ex-president would also be a drag for down ballot Republicans if he appears on the top line of a 2024 general election ballot, with Democrats holding a 5-point advantage on a generic congressional ballot, 47% to 42%. Although the WPA poll found dismal polling results for Trump at the time of the survey, his chances of beating Biden would become even more remote if he were to face charges from the state and federal prosecutors currently weighing whether to seek indictments against the ex-president. According to the survey, the 7-point deficit between the former and current president would grow by 10 points if he is indicted by Fulton County, Georgia District Attorney Fannie Willis, the prosecutor who supervised a special grand jury probe into Trump's efforts to overturn his 2020 election loss in the Peach State, were Ms. Willis to successfully seek an indictment against Trump from a grand jury, Biden's advantage would grow to 10 points, 49% to 39%. Among independents, Trump's deficit would grow to 21 points, with 50% saying they'd vote for Biden if Trump is indicted in Georgia, compared with 29% who say they'd still vote for the president, for the ex-president, Trump, even if he was indicted. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's a short one. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. Oh, yeah. Welcome back, everybody. You are tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Earl today, this week. I'll be here again tomorrow. And then Earl will be back on Monday. Things getting back to normal. And you are tuned into your local civic media radio station. And we've been discussing a few different things. Most recently, just before the break, we were discussing new poll numbers showing Joe Biden quite a few points ahead of Donald Trump, and possibly an even wider gap should Mr. Trump be indicted on other charges beyond what he's already been indicted on. We're going to get back to that story in just a minute, but I want to go to the phones first and see who we have here. First of all, let's go to Tom from Cedarburg. Tom, thank you for calling in, and what do you have to say today?
Hi, Stu. Good to hear you on the air still.
Well, thank you.
Well, yeah, my thought is really, how long has this been in effect, this debt ceiling? Is this something for more modern times, you know, last 50 years or 70 years, whatever? How is it put in place? Is this a law or is this a congressional rule or something like that? I don't know much about it. I wish the media would talk more of its history. So, you know, why is it there? Who's used it in the past? Politically, I think Republicans have used it. I think it was used in the 90s and a couple other times to slow things down. But now they're really, you know, trying to hurt the country and, you know, possibly the world for their own gains. But at this point, I'm against using it because if it goes to the Supreme Court, it's so far right, you know, they may say, well, this is now a law, and then we'll be stuck with it, where I think Biden actually could tell, you know, the U.S. Or the federal government to just keep on going on, you know, keep on working, and that, you know, direct things to, you know, pay for things that you need to be paid for now until the Congress works things out. So I don't think at this point it's a good idea to actually invoke the 14th Amendment. But I'm wondering, you know, how much information you have of its history, you know, and tell us. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom, thank you for the call. That's a great question. And I don't have the answer right off the top of my head, just from what I've heard and what I remember. I think it's been around since like World War II or something, if I remember correctly. But that's a good question. We should look that up and find out more about that and how that even came into existence and why we still have to keep following this, this debt ceiling. It may have been more recent, though, if now that I think about it, it may have been something from the Reagan era or something. There's probably a listener right now who knows the entire background of it and is yelling at their radio saying, Stu, I can't believe you don't know the history of this thing. But anyway, we'll look that up and see what we can find out. Thank you for that call, Tom. And let's move on and go to another caller. It looks like CJ's on the phone. CJ, what do you have for us today?
Thank you for taking my call, Stu. You know, a couple of the topics that you had mentioned quickly. First off, the Republicans still have a primary. And this poll, Biden has two candidates that are already running against him. He refuses to debate like he refuses to do a press conference. There's a woman that calls in, Cassandra, I think her name is. Sounds like a lovely lady. I'm nominating her to run against Tammy Baldwin. I love the respect that Earl and her have, speaking of issues, and she dominates. She just dominates, Stu. The debt ceiling. 2 years ago, when the president had both the Congress and the Senate, he could have raised the debt ceiling. You know why he didn't? Keep it a political issue. Stu, every man, woman, and child in this country owes $94,000 right now. Proven fact. I called Tom Hartman. He realized that it was a fact. That's why he's a national talk show host. That's why he cut my mic off. But it is true. That's why he got upset with me. That's how much we owe. At what point are you willing to not spend your grandchild's money? The Republicans actually did something that Biden didn't plan on, and that was to pass a bill. Remember the disarray of the Republican Party and 15 votes to get him to be speaker? You know what? The performance is already starting because the performance is truth. Truth is coming through every committee. They're passing bills. They can walk and chew gum, unlike our president, at the same time. This debt ceiling was created by Biden as a political pawn, and he didn't plan on, the Republicans did their job. And read what the bill the Republicans passed. It's very responsible, and it does raise the debt ceiling. So the mere fact that this political issue is loud and clear, and American people need to do more research, because you're not going to find it on ABC, CBS, or NBC. They didn't cover 1 minute of, you know what, the corrupt president and his family, even his grandchildren, getting money from China, Stu. Are you okay with
this? Yeah, I hear you.
Family?
All right, CJ, at least you and I agree on one thing. I agree that people should do more research. Everyone should do more research. And in fact, if you did a little more research, you might know that Joe Biden has reduced our national debt by, I believe, a couple trillion dollars just in the past couple years. So I agree with you. I think everyone should do more research. CJ, thank you for calling in. We're going to go to a break shortly, I believe. But before we do, I just want to get back to, it looks like we got a break coming up. So I'm not going to get back to it right now, but I'll get back to it after the break. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show.
or condition. Call.
Whoops. Oh, yeah. Welcome back, everybody. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show on a Thursday morning. Stu Daniels here as we make our way through the third hour, having a lot of fun talking to people on the phone. You can join in, too, if you want to. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. And before the break, we were talking about the national debt and the debt ceiling. And we were wondering about when it started, how it came about, why we have to do this every few years. And fortunately for us, we've got a good producer back in the studio, Calvin, who looked up some of this information. And what did you find out for us, Calvin?
Yeah, so I found out that prior to 1917, there was no debt ceiling. Congress had to authorize every loan that the Treasury made. During World War One in 1917, they created the Second Liberty Bond Act, which basically allowed the Treasury to issue bonds and take on other debt without congressional approval, as long as it was under the debt ceiling that they established. This was further cemented in 1939 during World War II when it was raised. I think that seems like it was the first time it was raised.
Before World War II, just before
World War II, yeah, World War II, 1939. Yeah. I think that was the first time it was raised. It was subsequently raised multiple times throughout World War II, and it's been a constant political issue of raising it since, particularly starting in 1995 with that debt ceiling crisis.
Yeah, that makes sense. The Newt Gingrich Congress in the middle of the Bill Clinton administration. I remember that now. And so it sounds like it was started in World War One, and then at the end of the Great Depression and just before World War II, they upgraded the legislation or whatever. And then it sounds like it was an automatic thing for a long time up until the mid-90s when... when Newt Gingrich decided to throw a wrench into things. Man, we're still suffering from things that that guy did many years ago. But thank you for looking that up, Calvin. We appreciate that. And just before the break, I was talking about this new poll that came out. This article in The Independent says that more Trump indictments would give Joe Biden and Democrats huge 2024 boost, according to this poll. And in fact, even without those indictments, Biden is ahead of Trump by 7 percentage points, 47 to 40. But if more indictments come down, it looks like, according to this poll by a Republican organization, the point difference would be even greater. The margin would be even greater than those 7 percentage points already. Just a little bit more from this article in The Independent. It says the investigation into Mr. Trump's alleged unlawful retention of classified documents would put him in slightly more electoral peril if the prosecutor overseeing that probe, Special Counsel Jack Smith, convinces a grand jury to approve charges against the former president. If Smith successfully obtains an indictment against Mr. Trump, he would face an 11-point deficit against Biden, who would lead him by a margin of 50% to 39%. Biden's advantage among independents would be 21 points strong. This is among independents. It would be 50% to 30%, although my math tells me that's 20 points. There's probably some percentage numbers or tenths of percent fractions that make it right around 21 points difference among independents. The survey did find that 68% of Republicans would definitely vote for the ex-president if he is indicted in either case. But Biden's margin against him would nonetheless grow because Trump would lose 5 percentage points of support from GOP voters. Losing 5% of Republican support would give Biden 2 more percentage points of support from GOP voters, rising from 5% to 7%. Trump's share of GOP respondents who said they'd probably vote to give a second term also falls from 13% to 9% if he is indicted in Georgia, and the number of currently undecided self-identified GOP voters would increase from 9 to 10% if he is indicted in Georgia, with that number growing to 11% if he is indicted by a grand jury. And Amanda Iovino, a principal at WPA, the group that did the poll, this is a Republican group, said in a statement that Biden, quote, would be spared a much-needed one-way trip to Delaware if Trump ends up the GOP nominee in next year's general election. Quote, contrary to what one may hear on Truth Social, Trump's indictment in either the pending Georgia or federal cases would energize Democrats, not Republicans, potentially producing the worst loss for a GOP presidential candidate in 60 years. In the process, Republicans would lose control of the House and forego pickup opportunities in the Senate, she said. So that's what's going on in the polls. I've seen some other recent polls that have similar numbers. And Biden's approval rate also now is up to 50%, which is the highest in quite a while. So evidently, people think, Americans, voters, think that what Joe Biden is doing and what the Democrats are doing seems to be working out okay. Let's see, what do we got now? About 20 minutes till 11. Let's go back to the phones. Looks like we have Tom from L.A. on the line. Good morning, Tom. What do you have to say today?
Hello?
Tom, are you there? Yep, you're on the air,
yeah,
brother.
I'm here, King. Excuse me. Okay. First off, we the people are ultimately the government, yeah, and we must never forget that. We need to wake up and just realize that we are the government. When Republicans tell you that government is bad, just remember they're talking about you, because you people, all of us, are the government. Second, again, I'm just really, really imploring everyone, check out Two Santa Claus Theory, Jude Winensky. It talks all about what the Republicans are up to with this whole debt ceiling thing. And the Republicans are just the party that basically, you know, spend and put it on a credit card. That's their whole mantra. And the Democrats is invest and get the return on investment for we the people. I also was very, very encouraged yesterday that Tom Hartman actually called CJ on the carpet and said, give me your source. And CJ was fumbling all over the place, so he kind of took him, CJ, to the woodshed about this whole idea of your grandchildren only $90,000 a year or whatever. So, no, there are many, many different revenue sources that the government get money from. So when CJ says what he says, it's just false. And again, I would really appreciate it if Earl show, but definitely when these Republicans get on and talk about their different talking points, right, he stops them and says, what is your source? What is your source? Because their source usually is an email that they got from a friend that told them about how bad Joe Biden was, or this happened or that happened. There's absolutely no source behind it. And it's unbelievable how these people can just get away with just spewing talking points and have nothing to back it up with. Thanks, Stu. I appreciate it. And I hope you get your own show, because I really want to hear more of you.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. Thank you for the call. And let's go to the next caller. I think it's, let's see. It's Tom's favorite caller. It's CJ. CJ, are you calling again?
I am, because I do have a source, and I gave it to Tom Hartman, the Congressional Budget Office. How's that work for you, Tom? Remember, I'm from the pro-death party. That's the fact. And you should look it up.
Yeah, that is a fact.
Thank you for taking my call. So what? So I am the member of the death party? Is that what you're saying, Stu? Or the fact that the Congressional Budget Office is my source? I give Earl sources every time. But thank you. I do appreciate you taking my call, because Tom calls with hate against me specifically. And I do appreciate you allowing to call him out, because it's a fact. It's the Congressional Budget Office. Just like it's taking $10,000 per illegal immigrant out of the foods and kicking our veterans out of housing now. Your party must be so proud.
Yeah, all right, CJ, that's enough for now. But thank you for calling back. And it looks like Tom might still be on the line. He might want a little rebuttal on this. Tom, are you still there?
I am still here. And again, they are the pro-death party. They show that they're the pro-death party every single day. I'm not talking about the individual constituents, but the policies of the Republican Party are the pro-death party. Number two, CJ, once again, Tom Hartman showed you that you were wrong about this whole idea of the immigration and all of this, because we have, you know, we do have an illegal employment problem in this country, but we don't have an illegal immigration problem in this country. Why don't you send some of those people to jail that, you know, that are hiring these people? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good point, Tom. That's an important point to bring up too, you know. Instead of going after people who are trying to escape tragic circumstances oftentimes, what if we went after the employers who hired these people, often in cases where they could be hiring union workers, but instead of hiring the union workers, which would cost them more money, they decide to hire undocumented workers because they can pay them less. They can often pay them under the table, so they don't have to pay as many taxes. And I think that's a great idea, Tom. Thank you for bringing that up. We got just a couple minutes before the break here. I'm going to go back to a story I was trying to get to earlier, but set it aside because there were so many other things going on. And this is something I mentioned a couple of days ago. Evidently, medications, drugs, prescription drugs are becoming difficult to get right now. Americans are confronting a shortage of several major drug treatments. This is a story from the New York Times. It says some cancer patients are struggling to get chemotherapy drugs. Antibiotics are scarce after winter's severe flu season. Medications for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder are in short supply. And even children's Tylenol has been hard to find. It says, this is, in my opinion, a public health emergency, Dr. Amanda Fader of the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine said. And here in this newsletter from the New York Times that I'm reading, it says that the ADHD medication shortage, which is reflective of many of the broader drug supply problems, and it says the Food and Drug Administration first acknowledged the shortage in October. Patients complain that they have to shop around at pharmacies to get their medications if they can find them at all. And without the drugs, many people say they can't even function. It says Edward DeNola, a game programmer and designer, told the New York Times that getting off the ADHD medication Adderall had made his sleep schedule piecemeal and unpredictable. After a week without the drug, he went to bed one day at 7 a.m. Quote, "It's a bit of a curse to not have control over your own energy," end quote, he said. We'll get to a little bit more of this after the break. This is going to be a quick break. Everybody stick around. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show.
currently.
Waukesha. She got a job at a local factory. Sent money back home to her family. She said, "This is where I belong. This is my home.
This is this is my home. This is where I belong." Now, what a great song. Gab Moe on a Thursday morning. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show on your local Civic Media radio station. I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Earl today. He'll be back on Monday. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for joining us. If you want to get on the air, you can give us a call. Phone number is 844-967-2789. This is our last segment of the day. I can't believe this show goes by so quick. But just before the break, we were discussing shortages of drugs. I'm talking prescription drugs here, especially drugs for cancer patients and drugs for people who suffer from ADHD. One gentleman in the story was talking about his Adderall. He can't get the Adderall now, and he can't sleep because he doesn't get the drug that he needs. It says here in this story from the New York Times, the broader shortages partly reflect supply chain problems for generic drugs, which make up 90% of prescriptions. But the ADHD medication shortage is more expansive in that it has hit brand name products like Adderall as well. That has left more people without the drugs they need. One reason for the ADHD medication shortage, the use of such drugs has surged. In recent years, from 2020 to 2021, prescriptions increased more than 10% across many age groups, a recent CDC study found. Why? Experts point to the collision of two recent trends in the U.S., the growing acceptance and acknowledgement of mental health issues, and policy changes brought on by the COVID pandemic that increased the use of telemedicine. First, activists and policymakers have for decades pushed Americans to take mental health issues more seriously, to view them not as moral failings or character flaws, but as health problems that need treatment. ADHD is an example of this acceptance. Experts long believed it mostly affected adolescent boys. In recent years, activists and patients have argued that ADHD can be a lifelong condition, that it is underdiagnosed and undertreated among girls and adults. Their view has gained ground, despite some criticisms that ADHD is already overdiagnosed in boys who are then treated with powerful, potentially dangerous stimulants. Second, telemedicine got a big boost during the pandemic as policymakers and medical facilities tried to limit in-person doctor visits. The shift not only allowed existing patients to continue getting treatment, it also allowed treatment for new patients who might not have made the trip to a doctor's office or a hospital before. These two trends acted together to increase demand for ADHD medications. As more people started to take their mental health more seriously, they had greater access to treatment, so more got on medications for ADHD. Beyond demand, several issues have potentially constrained the supply chain. Drug companies claim that government-set quotas have hindered supply, although the Drug Enforcement Administration has said that companies have not fully used what they have. Some pharmacies also argue that tougher rules for opioid painkillers have spilled over to other drugs, making it harder to get the supply they need. For generic drugs, there's a more systemic problem. The companies are under constant pressure to offer the lowest prices possible, and they often cut corners to reduce costs and keep prices low. That leaves them unprepared to increase supply as needed if, for example, demand rises. All of these factors are probably playing some role in the ADHD medication shortage, said Aaron Fox, a drug supply chain expert at the University of Utah. But because much of the drug supply chain is opaque, it is difficult to know what exactly is going wrong. The lack of transparency is itself a problem, not only for ADHD medications, but for other drug shortages. If the public and policymakers don't know what's going wrong, they can't help find a solution. So that's one of the issues going on right now. People can't get the drugs they need, not only for ADHD, but also cancer medications and other things as well. We only have a couple minutes left. Let's go back to the phones. Looks like we have Ken from Sturgeon Bay on the line. Good morning, Ken. What do you have to say today?
Good morning. Now we got problems with prescription drugs. Is there anything else that man could possibly screw up? Inflation, 40-year high, food prices, gas prices, baby formula, prescription drugs. What next? What next?
Wait a minute.
And it's pointed a finger all back at Republicans that we're the party of death.
Ken, you got to keep up with the news, my brother. The inflation has been going down quite a bit over the past several months, you know. And also this big recession that Republicans have been telling us is on the way never came. You know, it's been, what, a couple of years now since they said, oh, as soon as Biden gets in there, there's going to be a massive recession. Nobody will have any money. The economy is going to go down the tubes. And I think most people are pretty happy with the way things have turned out in the economy and the way that our current president has handled things. I think a lot more people are getting the help they need and are getting back on their feet after this incredible, historic pandemic that we've just been through. You know, I think that most people didn't think that we would be where we are now once that pandemic hit. So I don't know, Ken. If I were you, I would look up some of that stuff again, because I think you're wrong on several of the things you brought up. But thanks for calling. Always appreciate the call. And I appreciate everybody listening today. And it's been a good day. Lots of good stuff we've been talking about. And I hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. And Earl's going to be back on Monday. I appreciate everybody calling in today. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you have a great day. And thank you for tuning in. You are tuned in to your local Civic Media radio station. This is my